Hello, and welcome to the Unisys Services Segment Strategy webinar. All participants will be in listen-only mode. You may submit online questions at any time today using the window on the webcast. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Doug Thomas, analyst at GAMCO. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Chad, and good afternoon. First, I'd like to express my appreciation to Courtney and Dan Kane, and to say how helpful I think these regular conversations with Unisys business leaders are in terms of fostering a better understanding of the company on the part of investors. I think the consistency of the effort is paying off, as demonstrated by the stock price performance. And just by way of explaining the opportunity that remains, I was at an investor conference in the city yesterday and ran into an old friend, who I think is an extremely savvy tech investor, who, when I mentioned to him that he should tune in for this call, he said, "I didn't know Unisys was even around anymore." I say that not to discourage anybody, but rather to point out the significant opportunity that remains. With that in mind, today's presenter, Eric Hutto, who runs Unisys' enterprise solutions business worldwide, is going to delve into the company's non-federal services segment, which comprises the vast majority of Unisys' revenues and which has recently witnessed some terrific momentum. Services revenues, margins, and backlog were all up smartly in the second quarter. After Eric's finished, we'll take questions. Please don't hold back. And Eric, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Doug, and welcome, everybody. Look forward to our conversation today. If we can move forward to the agenda, I just want to make sure that we cover a few key slides here. And again, more for backdrop to kind of frame the conversation I hope we have at the end when I'm done talking. Well, one is we're going to look at our strategic direction. We announced this a year ago or showed it a year ago in New York. We're going to go back through it, and we'll talk about if anything has changed and little tweaks that we have that we've seen that the market is recognizing and expecting. A model for disciplined growth. This is important to me. As I lead this business unit and we look to drive it to be a much more successful business unit for the company, given the amount of revenue it represents, there is a framework. There is a very systematic approach that we're taking, one, to get the growth in, which you're beginning to see in all the TCV and ACV that we're beginning to win. At the same time, it's got to be disciplined, and we'll talk through that. And then strategy and action. As you listen to the strategic direction, you look at the model for the growth, let's talk about some proof points of it actually working and its real-life examples with clients and where these things are beginning to produce the results we expected them to produce. And lastly, how we're positioning for the future, because ultimately we have to have a sustainable business model that can weather the market changes and client expectations, especially in this industry that we participate in, which seems to be changing almost every year now. So, Daniel, if you don't mind, let's move to the first slide on strategic direction. So when we looked at and we last talked, these five items here, these pillars, if you will, have remained unchanged. Our commitment to our vertically aligned software-led solutions remains unchanged. And I always start with clients. I've been doing this for 12 years in this industry, at various companies like Dell and Perot, and as I've watched this industry mature, one thing that has always served each business that I've led for those companies is you start with the client. You have a relationship, not a transaction. And we're going to walk through how we have evolved our talent from 3 years ago when I stepped into the role to today. You know, what was it like then and what is it like today? And what was the levers that we used to pull to change behavior? Because that first block is all about having the right people with the right skills and exhibiting the right behaviors every day that clients are expecting a provider to have and engage them like. A modern go-to-market model, really important. Again, moving to a vertical decision in, I guess, August of 2015, hiring in the domain experts, understanding the very specific business problems. You know, the thing that everybody wants today is just an outcome. It's not about contracts, SLAs. Just understand my business problem and give me a very pragmatic, relevant answer to that challenge and show me how you can help me achieve my outcomes. And that's what we've been working on. We're going to talk about, again, how we've changed our talent, how we're retaining talent. And again, maybe what it looked like 3 years ago and how it sits today. And what we expect it to be doing, by the way, as we go forward. Maintaining our market leadership in next generation. We have been known for, if you will, end user in the past. We are more around digital workplace. Enterprise IoT management as more and more devices are proliferated into the infrastructure around the world. So we're evolving into being able to serve into that new dynamic. Key to that, obviously, is security and the ability to manage all of that complexity of connectivity. We have been consistently moving up and to the right with all of our service lines. Between Forrester, Gartner, Everest, whoever you're looking at, we are continuing to be recognized as not maybe a leader, but also a challenger. And that's just a testament to, I think, some of the changes we made and the way people are perceiving it and the fact that it's showing up in, again, TCV and ACV that we continue each quarter to bring in. Our industry software solutions, we obviously need IT in some of those areas and those industries as we focus on four industries. As we look at that, we all started with about 9 software products. I would say that as we've looked at this now a couple of years in the market, we don't need all of them to be successful. We would like for all of them to be successful, but we also recognize the market's always changing. So one thing I'm committed to do as I look at the investments we're making is to make sure they pay off. So, if we're moving with one of those software products and the market just isn't taking hold, the discipline I'm putting in the organization is that we fail fast. Let's just recognize that that's not going to work. Let's move on. And maybe we double down on one of the ones that's got great traction. And I think having that discipline and that mind shift from, I think, where the company was 3 years ago to today is really critical to maximize that return on investment. And then obviously security. I'm really excited about a lot of the things that now in the last really year or so that we've built upon from stealth and some of the things that we were already doing and is beginning to take traction. And now we have a holistic risk management conversation, which is where the clients are expecting us to be anyway. And I'm going to walk you through what we've done there. So again, strategic direction remains unchanged. A few tweaks, a few lever pulls here and there to make sure that we're maximizing the returns on this direction. Next slide, please, Daniel. So this is, a framework for growth. And I, again, would love to take credit for the framework, but I have to give it to Frank Blake, who I worked with at Home Depot when I was running services business for Home Depot. You really look at a business that grows in three ways, with especially services business. And this is about the relationship. You enhance it, you extend it, and you expand it. It's very difficult to expand your business with new clients if your existing clients aren't highly satisfied, aren't shown value that they will then speak on your behalf. I always look at our ultimate goal as just a referral. When a client's willing to refer you, there's a good shot that the new business you're pursuing, new clients you're pursuing, you can win. If I go back 3 years ago and I look at when I arrived in our very first industry analyst event, very difficult to get, no videos on our website of our clients, very few quotes. And today we're approaching 20 client videos on our website, people really speaking around the value that we've created and how we've changed and how we have accelerated the transformation to become even more relevant and certainly somebody that they see as being part of their strategic partnerships down the road. The enhanced to me is all about getting the right people. 3 years ago, we had a lot of what I would call very good account teams that could deliver contracts, that could deliver service level agreements. But the NPS, the Net Promoter Score that we used to survey our clients said, hard to do business with, not very innovative, not proactive. And so certainly that affects their perception of value. One of the first things that we did was change out roughly in 2016, a third of those client executives, bringing in much more stronger relationship-minded individuals, business development individuals, really understanding the industries that we were assigning them to as far as clients and where they operated. We changed the comp plans. Obviously, people will do what they're comp to do. So, a fair amount of their variable comp is tied to that NPS score. And that NPS score has to be a 9 or 10 on a scale of 9 or 10. If it's not a 9 or 10, we have not achieved loyalty. We have not achieved the relationship and the value. And we're very diligent about this. It has proven itself to be effective in the change of behavior. That shows up, obviously, in our renewal rates. In enterprise solutions and overall for Unisys, we are very much above industry average in retaining our client base at, you know, and greater than 95%. Now, that gives me stability in the revenue. That slowed the degradation of revenue that was declining off the company for years and gave us a little bit more of a stable base to operate from. I think we don't want to keep necessarily all clients, honestly. Not all clients are profitable. Not all clients will move in the direction that we need to move into. Not all clients are going to participate in expanding with us, which would be, you know, again, growing our revenue and profitability. So we evaluate and segment all clients across our business. And we make sure that we're looking at each one of them individually and how they contribute. I'm excited about, you know, in enhancing that is productivity, because that productivity affords me more operating room to invest, gives me more, obviously our clients see a better service, more efficient service. And we continue to improve that here, as you can see, with 36% year-over-year growth in just our cloud infrastructure services productivity. Why did I pick that particular metric? You're going to see in a moment that a lot of our TCV, ACV in this year is coming in through the cloud infrastructure services. The market has recognized the need to become digital. Everybody's on a digital transformational path. Most people have recognized their technical debt is in their infrastructure. And so they're beginning to shore up that infrastructure at the same time, turn it into platform. So we've seen a really big jump in the amount of cloud infrastructure type opportunities, and we have captured a fair share of those, and I'll talk about those again here in a minute when we discuss our strategy in action. Extend, again, if you look back 3 years ago, a lot of our clients had one line of service. They bought one thing from Unisys and never really branched beyond that. And we have put in metrics and, again, through the comp plans targeted to drive a behavior that says, look, they're consuming services with our competitors that we actually can provide, and we provide very well. So we want to get more wallet share. In response to that NPS around not being proactive or innovative, we challenged and put into the goals of our client executives to put in unsolicited bids. Don't wait for the client to ask you for an opportunity or issue an RFP. Simply understand their business, know the challenge they're having, and bring them ideas to solve that. I'll give you this one example in Europe where we had a CPG company, consumer packaged goods company, that's been a client for a while and again, had that one core line of service. And as we were coming through the year, the client executive really bought into this concept, and they submitted over 140 unsolicited bids, unsolicited ideas to help that company become more efficient, grow into markets they were trying to get into, and you know, transform their environment. The result of that was about 68 or so were accepted, and that resulted in $7 million more revenue on just one account. And that's the power of being proactive. That's the power of having a client executive who is business development-minded, who understands the industry, and is listening every day. The other thing that's been really successful for us is we established executive briefing centers. We have one in Reston, Virginia, remodeled, upgraded, high-end, shows all of our solutions, live demos through software. Just a great experience to get our clients out of their environment, bring them to our environment. And we have a pretty set agenda. You know, the first half is how are we doing together? What's working, what's not? And then based on their needs and the things that they're faced with, we create an agenda to show them all the things that Unisys has to offer that could help them achieve their goals. And that's what the back half of the 2 days is really focused on. And it's been eye-opening. We've had five clients all the way from Sydney in New Zealand fly to Reston, Virginia to have this experience. And it has already added new business to us, and it is something that we are accelerating and getting more clients into, because it's a great way to make sure that they are aware of the new Unisys. And it's also live, and they're uninterrupted because they're away from their office. And then when I look at expand, again, enhance and extend to me are all about getting our client base in a position. We have value. We have a relationship. They're buying more things from us, so that means they're more confident in us, and they give us the referral. And I think the hard work done in 2016 in changing the people, changing the comp plan, you know, getting people focused and listening led to both enhance and extend. But that's why we got, you know, approximately 92 new clients or so in 2017, because they had all these referrals, those videos that they could find online now where people were really talking about the value. That's the model for growth. And it's working. You can see it in all of the TCV and ACV really since the middle, most beginning of 2017, all the way through even second quarter this year. And we continue to have good signings and people coming our way. So with that said, it brings a lot of work. We have roughly 17, I think we actually just closed out a transition, 16 new business transitions. In other words, we're standing up 16 new clients right now. And I'm going to talk about some of those on the next slide. All that said, we have some operating tenets that we must live by. We cannot afford to repeat the sins of the past. So we have narrow our focus to have a much broader impact. We recognize where we sit financially. We understand the resources we have to invest, and we must use them really wisely. So narrowing down the offering set, keeping ourselves focused on four industries, doing what we do very well and doing it every day very well, and not getting too broad again. That way we can really maximize the use of our SG&A. We can keep our talent on the greatest opportunities to succeed. Our win rates have jumped up dramatically since 2016, where we were roughly in the single digits, and now we're exceeding 30 and 40% win rates on our new business. And that's the growth opportunity, is when we can get the new business jumping at the rate it's jumping now. Expect what you expect. So as you would imagine, I have global responsibility, traveled around 390,000 miles last year, probably get close to that this year. While I've got dashboards and we've got better indicators and things we can look at, and I talk to clients, you really can't get past getting to the market, getting eyeball to eyeball with your people, with your clients. I want to know the change that we are putting in place, the direction that we're putting in place, is not only is it permeating down to the organization and getting to the front line, which is what our clients begin to see as the Unisys brand. It is that person that becomes the brand. Are they truly operating in the new way? Are our clients feeling the new Unisys? And I'm really thrilled that more often than not as much as I would like, but more often than not, clients will say, you're not the same company you were, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, some even 6 months ago, if they're relatively new. And that's the proof in the pudding. That's what you want to hear. And that's when we know that we're kind of getting it down to the organization. And then positive but realistic. Very important that we really state our strengths, really stay close to what we will do well. We just simply cannot afford to get too broad, too quick, too shallow in our capabilities, because it will just show back up in poor NPS, poor referrals, and we'll just start another cycle over of slowing our business growth. So we really don't oversell. If we can't do it well, is what I drive the teams to know, then let's not do it. We will get the business. We will get the right business. We will get profitable business. But let's just don't get any business. Our clients actually trust us more because we're actually one of the few, I believe, in the market that will simply say, that's just not our sweet spot. We can do this, but we're going to partner with this, or we really think you're better served to look over here. That's what clients expect from a strategic partner that is playing more the long game than the short game. So again, model for growth has to be disciplined. We have to operate within tenets to help guide our decision-making. And I think so far it has really begun to prove that it's successful. And again, one of the bullets here, we're up 126% in first half 18 over 17 in just our new business. And just to remind everybody, that new business growth, that 89% you see in new business, is new logo, so new clients, and new scope. That's that extend part of this slide. That's where they're buying a new line of service from the company. And that's the exciting part that I truly believe that our strategy is effective and working. Okay, next slide, Daniel. So how does that manifest itself into the results we all want, which is financial results and sustainable results? I chose the government infrastructure modernization because, as you will have seen, we've had quite a bit of very large contract wins over the last couple of quarters. And why has that happened? You heard in our technology webinar that was done earlier that we are building scalable and repeatable solutions. We have to have the ability to identify the right answer, create that answer, and then scale and repeat it. across the globe, or certainly within a region or an industry. And so I wanted to talk a bit about the services scalable and repeatable. And so if we look at governments around the world, they are all struggling to create a more efficient model, lower tax bills for their citizens, at the same time, get themselves ready to have the type of citizen engagement that, well, their population expects. And that's a much more digital environment. So this is where our vertical strategy has just been absolutely wonderful. We have a great public sector team, very good thought leaders. Mark Foreman heads up our global public sector business, and setting the vision of a digital government in play, helping articulate what that should look like 1, 2, 3 years down the road has helped us drive a lot of our core service cloud infrastructure services into these states. And again, these are really large contracts, over $100 million, the Virginia Information Technology one being over $240 million over 5 years. What do we learn from our Commonwealth of Pennsylvania? This was our first entry into, quote, digital government back in 2014. And as we evolved with the Commonwealth and as we learned through that process, one of the things that we realized real quickly is this is going to become the trend. This is what all, you know, state and local governments are going to have to go through to get ready for digital environments and citizen engagements. And by the way, even the platform for safe cities. And to be able to begin to move in that direction. So we created a playbook, all the lessons learned. We looked at the things that were working, didn't working. We made those tweaks, upgraded tool sets. And then we started taking it to, as you can see, Georgia, Kansas, Virginia, Hawaii, and it resonated. It resonated because, one, we understood the environments of public agencies and the difficulties of change, because change management in this space is equally as important as the technology. But we also understood the technology. And because we had been successful in one place, they felt like we would be less risk to go with. And again, great contract win, very vertically oriented, but leveraging core services to deliver on an outcome that these state and local governments need. If you look to the right side of this slide, you have the leverageable solutions. And again, we are all about security. It's our tagline, it's what we believe in, and it's also the thing that just about anything that people will buy in the future from a provider like us, you have to be able to answer this question. How are you going to secure me? How does this not leave me vulnerable if I were to put your solutions into my environment? This is where I think we have taken the great work that we did with the Stealth product. I think we've taken the great work over the years that we've done getting that product to market, helping people understand its value. As it's beginning to ramp up and you've seen the number of new clients that we continue to onboard, we wrapped around it now the bigger conversation of risk. Because what the clients are really asking us is, how do I manage my risk? How much money should I spend on security? Because nobody has enough money. And that's why we introduced TrustCheck. TrustCheck allows us to very quickly assess the environment and help a CISO or CIO or even a CEO understand in their environment, what are the priorities? Where should you spend your money first? How does that risk look? How do we mitigate that? And then help articulate that story, if you will, up to the board or the audit committee or whoever is inquiring. So that's been something that people have been really excited to see, because I think sometimes our clients struggle to have the upward conversation around why this money should or shouldn't be spent in these areas. Obviously, endpoint protection is also something that we have accelerated with our managed services solution. And that continues to also be something that we have to get better at. And we've been really good at it so far. But again, everything's changing so quickly. So we constantly are upgrading. We brought in partners with Cylance. You know, this challenge of risk is greater than any one company. And our ecosystem that we built around our partners with LogRhythm and Cylance and others have given us credibility that we know we can't be the total answer. And clients are looking for a very balanced provider who, one, recognizes their capabilities but has a better answer to the overall risk. And I think we're answering that mail now. If you look at IntelliServe, this is around our digital workplace. We have a significant amount of business in this space. It's a large part of our revenue. It is the field engineering services that we see here. They're going to be invaluable. This is one of the strengths of our company. Not many people have the reach of engineers in over 100 countries that we do, to be able to go in and deal with things that are happening out in the field. We have significant clients in the space. You know, we serve some of the biggest names, Dell EMC to Microsoft to, you know, they've all entrusted, and obviously HP, as we announced in the first half of the year, have all entrusted their client base to us because this is something that we're extremely good at. But where's it going? This is where this IoT and this proliferation of connected devices is where I believe our field engineering strength will propel us into that space and down the road to, you know, what I believe will be higher end, more profitable type services. It will also help us evolve our service desk into more software defined solutions that can be dispatched out to handle a lot of this IoT world. Lastly, again, you can see on the left all the wins we've had in our cloud infrastructure services, and infrastructure modernization is such a big topic that our Cloud Forte platform is just critical. It gives everybody a stable platform. It gives them the ability to develop native applications, native cloud applications. And this is where things are going to get more efficient. And this is where, well, frankly, the ecosystem of most clients will be based, is in the cloud, around the cloud, and from the cloud, if they're going to compete, if legacy companies will compete against the native digital models. So again, just an example of we're scaling, we're getting better at repeating, we continue to accelerate this, and this is just a good example in services of where we got it right. It's won significant amount of TCV and ACV values for us, and we're going to continue to get other items that we have more scalable and repeatable. Daniel, the next slide, please. So this is the last slide I have in terms, and then we'll open it up to questions. A lot's gone well. Not everything's gone perfect. You know, markets are changing, clients are changing, and you know, you have to react to that. Lots of macroeconomic events that I track, given that I have the global responsibility, from the Brexits to the GDPRs to just elections going on in Brazil, it seems like, for the last year. And you all those things, currencies, you know, we watch and we track and we look. So how do we get ourselves positioned to have a more sustainable performance as we go forward in the company? And again, if I look back 3 years ago as I arrived and I looked at the company then, tremendous amount of talent. We have and still have a lot of talent that has been at this company in engineering. Our technology teams have created some very relevant and impactful technologies over the years. The key now is to accelerate the speed of those innovations. And then how do they fit into the new ecosystem? So job one is talent. I'm a big believer in know the situation you're in. That could be at an account level, very specific client relationship, all the way up to a region to the global business. What is our situation? What are the skills I need to either move me from that situation to the next position I need to be in? Or maybe it is a situation we like, we need to sustain it. No doubt the market is in a race for talent. We've been very successful over the last 2 years. And I say that's not over the last 3 years, really since 16 and full year of 17 and early 18, to get the right leaders into our services business, to get the right leaders into those leverage solutions so that we can get more profit, more productivity, be more relevant and way more automated. And that's going to go to the next one, which is the profitable growth. But staying on the talent, we focus on the experience at Unisys. We recognize that people think of us as a brand, or maybe their perception of Unisys is from 10, 15 years ago. But the clients that have arrived with us over the last few years spend more with us. They only know the new you. We're engaging talent in the marketplace. That new leadership team has brought with them talent. So far we've been able to attract what we need to get this company the talent it needs, the strategy it needs to get laid out, and get it operationalized. But that's not good enough. What talent looks for in the future is three things. They want something that has purpose. They want to know that what they're doing has purpose. They want to work on cool things. The first two we have, you know, creating safe cities is a pretty good purpose to have. Creating and working on digital governments and solving, you know, things that everybody deals with are cool projects. You know, working in security, obviously everybody who has security skills is looking for the company that has the right security mindset and freedom to think and design and operate. And I think that's the experience we focus on. And again, it attracts the talent and keeps the talent. Change the people or change people. I started my career out at Walmart. Sam Walton was still alive. And I'll never forget, because this is exactly the words he told me, and this was in 1987. He said, business is going to move fast. And he said, and you're either going to be able to change people, in other words, they're capable of evolving, they're capable of being relevant year after year after year, or you have to change those people. And so one of the things that I looked at 3 years ago is, you know, the company itself had a lot of layers. It's very, very tall in layers. And we've been delayering the company. Why? One is it takes out a lot of middle management. It takes out a lot of what most companies, you know, over time develop, which is permafrost. So it gives us speed and agility. It gives us less of the bureaucracy that the talent we need to attract, they don't want to deal with. And it accelerates the changes at the front line. And that's where the client experience is really, really recognized, is when the front line is operating with more empowerment, more creativity. And clearly within a governance structure that is still effective to control results, but not so impactful that it doesn't create the experience for our people or for the clients. Which really leads me to the last bullet here on talent, which is we want to be a rigorous culture, but not ruthless. We have to have the discipline. We've instilled it. We have to have the drive to make this company great, not just good, but great. And so, you know, as I tell people all the time, no one gets to stand on the line. You're either participating or you're gone. And I think that has shown up in some of our results, that people are getting on board with that. Profitable growth is important. We qualify our opportunities. We are pursuing less deals. We have a very healthy pipeline. It grows. It is plenty of business in our pipeline to look at. It's a matter of the highest probability to win. Where do we put our talent? What do we know about that opportunity that says those are the 10 that we go after because we can win those? And so we've brought in Covey and Power Messaging. We've really changed how we talk to our clients. And so, therefore, we now know the best qualified deals to win, and I think that's why our win rates are up, threefold. As much as we are accelerating intelligent solutions to our clients, we also have to use that same intelligent solution internally. You know, so we look at AI and machine learning, and we use our data scientists inward to help us get smarter and see trends faster, see indicators of performance or decisions we're making, you know, not just after a quarter ends, but in the quarter. And so we began to look inward with some of that talent, and it has helped us see things now that we can make better decisions on quicker to affect quarterly, you know, performance, not just, you know, at the end of a quarter, which we every other quarter. The hardest thing about the job we do in profitable growth is looking at our relationships that we have with clients and removing the low-calorie relationships. Those are the ones I talked about earlier that just will not grow with us. They're not interested in being a partner. We're just a vendor. We're not going to be as profitable with them. We have been successful at having difficult conversations and again, improving challenged accounts. We've improved many of them by having the conversation. Getting the courage and getting the right people in who have the experience to have those conversations, who are not afraid to have them, has been also important as we've upgraded the talent. We will continue to do that. Structure, this all comes from our Net Promoter Score. We talked about it earlier, but we have to be easy to do business with. We can't be hard to negotiate with. We have to get what we need to protect the company. We got rid of our managed services agreement, for example. We brought in just a term sheet. Here's what the company has to get in our negotiations to protect itself as we enter into new relationships. And that has made a big difference, because the sales experience for a lot of our clients is if it's really efficient, effective, it's relationship-oriented, that's how they will perceive the operational relationship to be. And that gives them confidence that we're probably the right people to go into business with. The delayering of the company, the narrowing of the focus has made us more responsive. We're much more agile and lean. This has shown up in our NPS feedback around innovation and proactiveness. What used to take weeks or maybe even a month to respond to a client on, we're now doing in days and a week. And they have noticed that. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot more of that new scope coming in and getting one, is because we're responsive and we're proactive. One of the drivers of the structures I'm looking at now over the next, 2 to 3 years is more non-linear revenue. What do I mean by that? If you look back a few years ago, the company would add revenue, but it would add a significant amount of cost to get that revenue. We want to add this revenue, but we want to add a fraction of the cost to get that revenue. And so just as an example, when I look at my revenue productivity, I separate all the new business that we've been winning from the revenue that we already had. And we set targets to drive out, if you will, through efficiencies and through automation, to drive down the headcount required to support the base revenue. And that's where we're getting less cost and sustaining the revenue, getting more profitable. And we keep that separate from new business because new business sometimes can cloud that view. So again, much more discipline, much more targets, much more focus on really using AI and machine learning and data scientists to help us see where we're inefficient so we can continue to be more productive in that base revenue. And then doing all those things right depends on taking care of clients. And again, with the compensation plans being aligned to their NPS scores for our clients, to even my compensation is tied, Peter, all the way up to the SLT. NPS is an impact to us, and it should be, because satisfied clients buy more. We know that. When clients buy more from you, more lines of services, that's that extend part of growth, you tend to have higher profitability in that relationship. These are just statistically proven. They're models over years that have been developed. And so just getting that right, we get a lot of referrals. We get a lot of new clients, and they are really, really important. We've tracked the amount of spend that a new client in the last 3 years spends with us after the initial engagement versus people have been with us longer. And it's as much as 60% more we get project work from our newer clients. And I think that's important that we understand why we get that new business. We obviously want to keep our renewal rates up, but they need to be desirable relationships. I spoke to that. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I started with outcomes, and I'm going to end with outcomes. We have to solve business issues. We're not selling technology. We're not selling services or products. We're selling an outcome. The more we understand the outcome, the more we can articulate by choosing Unisys. Here's how that you create value for your company. It's not what we do. It's what you can do with us. That's our power messaging training. That's getting us to talk the way clients want to be engaged. We become relevant. We deliver secure solutions, and they're affordable. And that's that positive but realistic operating tenet. Don't just sell them to sell. Sell what they need, deliver it well, and I assure you, more business comes. And that is, again, proven over time through many studies. So with that said, that's what I had to talk about today. I know that was fairly quick. I hope that you saw that its intention is strategy remains the same. We're tweaking things. We're reacting faster to things that aren't working. We're accelerating things that are. We have a model for growth. We have operating tenets that keep us within a profitable growth direction. Some proof points around that strategy, and of course, then how we are looking toward the things that are important to us to sustain performance on your behalf. With that, Doug, I'll turn it back over to questions that are coming in, and I'll be glad to answer any.
Thanks, Eric. A terrific presentation. I'll start off with one, and I'll follow up on something that you talked about. Investors, everybody, I guess, has a different definition of services and what services mean. And we all, I think, understand the key desires of most companies and probably most Unisys customers in terms of digitization and in terms of security. But could you provide maybe, some anecdotes about other types of unmet needs? What sort of problems in general are your customers facing today? And what sorts of solutions, are they seeking with respect to the partnership with Unisys?
As you would imagine, as I get around the world, I talk to a lot of clients, different industries, different regions, cultures. There are some common themes. There are some absolute common themes. Let me start with one of the biggest conversations that is going on. And I think it's because we're just super good at marketing inside of the IT industry, and that's digital. The biggest challenge that companies are having, C-level executives are having, is what is digital, and how do I become digital How do I go about getting to that digital state? And how do I know I've been digitally transformed, right? How do I know I've got success? They're being asked by boards. And CEOs are trying to explain it to the board. And then the CEO is trying to have their senior leadership team explain it to them. Here's what I would say, and I'm actually doing a series here in Dallas with about 50 executives each quarter. We've been on this journey to help them understand digital. You have to know the difference between optimization and transformation. And this actually bridges beyond digital. It's any IT initiative. You can use digital tools and technologies, Doug, to be more optimized, to be more efficient. The difference between that and transformation is a new source of revenue. And that's what I guide them to be able to articulate to their CEO or up to the boards, is if what we're doing does not generate a new line of revenue, then you are optimizing, you are not transforming. And so understanding, to your point about the definition of services or definition of things, that's job one for most of our engagement is, do we actually understand what it means to be digital, to be transformed, or are we really just optimizing? The second thing that is not technology-oriented, believe it or not, and we have a practice around it, is change management. One of the biggest challenges companies have is their legacy. No different than Unisys when I arrived 3 years ago, the legacy of this company. There are great things about the legacy of Unisys, and there are things clearly that none of us liked, right? Because those things, that legacy, didn't lead to financial results we all wanted. So how do you change the behavior? You could put in all the technology you want, but the behavior remains the same. You simply get the same results a different way. And I think those two things, to me, are the topics of mine. And that's what most executives are actually struggling with, is how do I get my, I hate to use the word culture, but how do I get my culture to be different, to be aligned with where I'm trying to get to at an accelerated pace? I think services, you know, there's lots of definitions of it, but, you know, to me, if you're truly serving your clients, then you're meeting their outcome. You're adding the value into their ecosystem. And I think our job as Unisys, and we very much have our eye on this, is down the road, as digital becomes mainstream, digital, native digital, if you will, business models become more mainstream, Unisys is simply going to be part of an experience that people will opt into and pull into to create their experience. If you're relevant, you've got these things defined, well, you understand how to create value, they're going to opt into your solutions, if you will, and pull it into their overall ecosystem to create value for your clients. And I think that attach rate is how digital-type companies will begin to measure themselves. But to me, services start with listening and then delivering an outcome that is needed and advances our clients on whatever that particular objective was.
Thanks. Another question is, you talked about not having unlimited resources. You talked about things like failing fast and not, you know, being willing to tolerate, losing propositions for long. How do you, given what you said about, you know, the new 92 versus jettisoning some older clients and then building existing customers, can you, you know, help investors understand, how you devote resources, particularly, the question of existing clients where there may be an opportunity to cross-sell them additional services versus, totally new clients?
Yes. Let me start by just saying this. I'm a big believer in, we have to be very careful. As we get the company now, you know, much more stable and we're getting the new clients in, you know, we jumped 92 new clients last year, various sizes, but some very large ones, already some very large contracts this year. There's a balance in my mind between the number of new clients we can add at any one time and at the same time the wallet share expansion of your existing base. Again, if you look at statistical proof, if your NPS scores are high, they tend to buy more line of services from you. That generates generally more profitable relationships, right? You're stickier. So that's why that enhance and extend is critical. We have to maintain a healthy base. It's the predictableness of the revenue. It makes that in-year revenue climb easier to accomplish. But we do need the new clients. One, as I mentioned, when we do sell new clients, they tend to buy more faster because they're not overcoming, if you will, our legacy, right? What they thought we were 10, 15 years ago. Sometimes that's hard to convince people you really are different. So it is a blend. So I'd like to see us, you know, get those new clients, but I don't want to ever see us get to where we have to have more new clients than we have existing clients, and that balance gets out of whack because that's a stability issue for me. I think it's important that the client executives, and we have been focused very much, you know, on our services delivery managers. Those are your two key client interfaces. Those two people make or break the relationship. One is listening and solving business problems and bringing in the talent from the company to help them, you know, show the client how we can solve the problem. The service delivery manager is making sure that the high quality of service and constantly looking at the solution we develop to make it even better, because that keeps the client highly satisfied. And then, of course, they want to talk to our people about new opportunities because their experience is so good with the initial engagement. So we are constantly looking at the talent we have. Is it the right talent? Is it going to grow with us over the next 3 years? And we've been upgrading the service delivery managers, all right? Some are really good. They're on the wrong account. We move them. A lot of them we're bringing in. We're selling more complex multi-tower, you know, multi-line of service deals. And it requires a different skill set than this company has seen, you know, over many years, because we've not been in a high-growth, high-selling position. The way we keep clients is to listen, be pragmatic, and be relevant with the things that we present to them. And that starts with, again, the talent we bring in that understand that client's industry, their challenges, and frankly have the skill set and a business development mindset. I'm interested in the relationships, not the transaction. New clients, we've made some significant changes in some of the way we pursue our, again, investment in power messaging. Being able to articulate the value of our relationship together versus what we do is critical. Most executives make a decision from loss. What will I lose if I choose Unisys over somebody else? Is that loss less or more? And ultimately, understanding that psychology is important. Bringing in more experienced pursuit leaders who understand highly complex deals, who can work with third-party advisors more effectively, who know how to guide the client toward the outcome, you know, and build confidence in relationships. We've made a significant change in those pursuit talents in the U.S. market. I started there first because, as we all know, that's where we needed to make sure that we protected our profit. We got our business solid. It ties to some of the debt covenants that we took out a couple years ago. So job one was get that going, and it worked. Worked huge. $1 billion of new TTV in the U.S. market. We're taking that model out to the rest of the world. That's dependent on finding the right talent. But just recognizing that people buy differently, and they want to be engaged differently. And Ruxpol, our CMO, has done a fantastic job of building awareness, digital campaigns, our website being revamped. Significant amount of our buyers still get educated and go to the website. So getting that right, getting the right value prop and the message out there and what we can do, use cases, all those things, I think, Doug, made a difference in the ability to keep clients and attract clients.
Yeah, that's great. I want to ask you, based on what you just said, you know, that you have a tremendous resume. You worked at some terrific companies. You mentioned Walmart and Home Depot and Dell. I think it's probably true that not one of those companies, all of those companies have done acquisitions from time to time, where they found something that they needed that they didn't have. I think it's also true that Unisys, since the time, you know, you arrived and Peter got there, hasn't made an acquisition. And I'm just curious, you know, when people try to read into it, I'm not a fan of doing acquisitions just for acquisition's sake, and I don't think anybody else is either. But when you try to, you know, at least have investors understand where you're headed, particularly in your key verticals, is it likely that you're going to continue to be able to grow the way you want to, organically, or is it likely that at some point you're going to reach out and find out that there's some talent out there that you need, or some sort of a key technology that you don't have, you wish you did? How should people anticipate the future in terms of, you know, organic growth versus acquisitions?
I think, you know, if I go back 3 years when I started, we just weren't in that position, right, to be looking outside. We had to get our ship in order. We had to get things stable. We had to get ourselves in a position that we knew that we could make the model we have work, make it, you know, incrementally get better. I think we've been doing that. I think we absolutely have to be inquisitive, though, in the market. And we have been. But we have to be very disciplined, right? You could buy, to your point, a lot of things. If it doesn't bring significant synergies or IP that I can embed then into my software that enhances the ability to get more revenue or profit from them, you know, then we're likely, you know, have to look at passing because, you know, they're hard, right? Having done a lot of acquisitions, we did a tremendous amount of acquisitions before we took Dell private. And, you know, big believer in do no harm. So if we had make an acquisition, you really want to be careful not to disrupt that momentum of that acquisition as it comes inside the company. There's synergies to be had. There's things to be done. But, you know, for the most part, you want to make sure you don't do too much harm to its momentum. But we are inquisitive, and that's my job. My job is to challenge and bring ideas forth to Ender and Peter where I think we are lacking or maybe need to enhance. At the same time, there's things that might come available that are just highly synergistic, and to bring them in, while they may not have a lot of revenue growth going on, they might be very affordable and generate a lot more cash. So, you know, as running the business unit, looking at it, I constantly have my eyes and ears open. And we have looked at things. It's not that we've been, you know, not participating. It's just, to your point, haven't found that one thing that is slotting in. But we are inquisitive. And now that the company's a bit more on the uptick, I think we can afford to be more inquisitive and handle it with the leadership and some of the experience we brought in that know how to, you know, digest, if you will, an acquisition.
And then I was wondering, you know, clearly the progress that you have been making has not been unnoticed, not going unnoticed by your competitors. And I'm just wondering if you could maybe, you know, you don't talk about competitors very often, and I know people, you know, generally don't ask you much about them, but, you know, have you seen any competitive responses from, maybe you want to talk about your competitors and a little bit, maybe you don't want to name them, but, you know, maybe you do. You know, what are they, you know, what are they thinking about, and how are they responding to the changes that are underway at Unisys? And, you know, do you see that in evidence when you go to bid against them? You know, how are things changing on the competitive front?
Well, I'll try to take that in three parts. One is they have noticed that we are actually relevant, that we are viable, and we are serious at going about the marketplace and to remain in this industry. I think, to me, the talent changes we've made in our pursuits, the way we go about qualifying, really applying the best and brightest to the opportunities we truly want to win. And I'll give you a good example of a different take to that. We don't just sit and wait for RFPs to come out anymore. About a year ago, I worked with one of our really, really good sales executives. He's a great, you know, hunter, knows how to go get the new logos. And we decided that there was a particular financial institution in the U.S. that we wanted to do business with. They only have 16 strategic providers. They weren't looking to add any. And I learned this at Dell. They do a great job of what they call acquisition programs. So we decided that we were just going to get a meeting. And it has taken a year, a little over a year. We just signed the MSA, the Master Service Agreement, with that financial, and it's large. Can't announce it today, but because we just got it done, but I hope to hear soon. My point is this. It's, you know, we're not going to sit back and wait and compete on RFPs because that's what our competitors hope we're doing. We're actually going to get aggressive and go out and select relationships, and we're going to go knock on doors. We're going to go get our acquisition program going so that we can acquire the relationships and brands we need that give us even more credibility in the market, that other people wake up and go, we should be talking to them. So that's one approach to staying ahead of our competition. Has the competition shifted? It has. Certainly when you look up and you're beating the likes of IBM and NTT Data and DXC, you know, on some very large contracts around the world, certainly they're doing what we did, you know, 2 years ago. We sat down and created a battle plan. How do I want to approach when I'm competing against IBM or DXC in a pursuit? What do I know about how they win? So I'm pretty sure they're all writing their battle plans. Our job is to constantly change our playbook, constantly change our approach, so that they, by the time they figure out what they think our game plan is, it's now a different game plan. And we are in a better position today to do that than ever because of the investment we are making in constantly scaling up our pursuit strategy, constantly looking at the ways that people want to buy. Recently spent time with some people at Amazon looking at how they're going to evolve the marketplace and how they envision services to be consumed via the marketplace of the future. And we're making the right adjustments with our software and technology so that all of our proof of concepts can be done on the web. And so those are the types of things that just keep us one step ahead. Certainly some of the changes with the Trump administration have impacted our competitors. With the H-1B visa approach and kind of getting that program to be back to where it was intended to be, we've seen a lot of the Indian pure plays get more aggressive in other regions, mainly like EMEA. We see a significant amount of aggressive pricing. What I would say, given what I know their cost structure is, our cost structure is, we're not terribly out of whack with some of those services, and they're just buying business. Well, we're going to let them buy that business. So that means we're going to shift our attention and focus to the areas of EMEA where they're not and win that business, and maybe even accelerate other areas around the world to win that business, because, you know, that's just how the markets are, and competitors will move to markets and try to jumpstart businesses. We will not play in the price game. We clearly are smart enough to know when it's a strategic decision, and we might decide that we want to, you know, take a little bit less margin on the deal to break into something. A lot of companies do that. It's very effective. We're just not going to play that game very much. So I do think that those shifts have been happening with our competitors. I'd say lastly, there's a lot of my competitors right now that are making acquisitions, they're merging, they're forming new companies, and that takes a lot of inward focus. So that affords Unisys and has afforded Unisys the opportunity to go out and talk to their clients and approach them. Because, again, we're very customer-centric. We're good listeners now. We have really, really come in a customer-centric way, and some of these clients are very frustrated with that experience that they're having. So I think all of that, Doug, to me, is a bit of the marketplace. Of course, you have all the other macroeconomic events and GDPR and all the things are beginning to proliferate beyond Brexit and all that stuff that's happening. We're well positioned with public sector. We're well positioned with security to participate in those opportunities, right? And not where maybe a few years ago, maybe in 5 years ago, we were predominantly an end user company, and that's kind of what we could compete in. Now we can compete in infrastructure. We can compete in applications. We can compete in security, and so that gives us the ability to, I think, chase different things and avoid the price wars sometimes when you're too narrowly in your offering.
Eric, so Doug and much. Eric, it's Courtney here. I'm just going to jump in because we're right at the top of the hour here, and we don't have any further questions on the web. So I think at this point, Doug will say thank you very much to you for moderating this discussion. I think it was some great questions from you, and we appreciate the dialogue and your participation in this. And Eric, we really appreciate you taking the time to share a little bit more insight with everybody on the call. And I'd like to also say thank you to everybody who dialed in to listen today. So with that, I think we will wrap it up for this afternoon, and we'll look forward to speaking with everybody soon.
Thank you, Doug, and thank you, Courtney. Thank you, everybody.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.